Greetings, Flesh Wound Horror Freaks, and welcome to a brand new special episode of Flesh Wound Horror. I'm Daniel Schein, joined by Todd Loya.
What's up?
Pugs Dread.
Namaste.
And Mike Kruger.
What's up, you sick motherfuckers?
So I am super excited tonight. We are interviewing one of my modern day heroes. I think he's probably the best director in horror today, and that is John Evernall. Most of you will know him, of course, from Baskin. I think one of the best horror movies of the last 30 years. I mean, I love Baskin so much. If you haven't seen that, do. Also his follow-up Housewife, and we also talk a lot about his new film, The Girl with No Mouth. So John is just so awesome. We were so happy that we were able to get this interview with them, and there's also some surprises. So without further ado, here's our interview with John Evernall.
How you doing, dude?
Nice to meet you guys. I'm doing all right. I'm doing I'm super tired, but super happy. My life is like basically like uncut gems.
Oh, that's too intense for me.
Jesus. See, I was watching it with my wife, and at some point my wife turned to me saying, John, this is basically your life paced. And really, like, I have two kids now. My second son, sorry about that, I got a phone. My second son is 2.5 months old. My first son,
congratulations.
Thank you. My first son is terrible too. And I'm like on the editing post-production of season 2 of this indie call girl drama that we did for a digital platform here. And I'm just like struggling with financial issues of being an independent filmmaker in Turkey.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, speaking upon that, you know, The Girl with No Mouth finally got its U.S. release last month. So I guess we'll get right into the interview. I just recently watched it. I got to say, I love the film. One of the things that really impressed me the most about it were all the child actors. Each of them really, I felt connected with the viewer on a level well beyond their years. How is working with all of them?
I try to reinvent myself, like every time I do something, like try new genre, try different vibe, different kind of actors, different kind of atmosphere, different kind of spirit to the story. So this was a challenge for me, like doing a children's adventure. And before this, I worked in a Turkish TV drama, which paid really well, but like I didn't connect with the script, but it had great actors, like some celebrity actors, which are like A-list. And I never liked any of the shows they did, but when I got to work with them, I was like so impressed with their level of acting. And I felt like, oh my God, after every time they do a scene, I'm like, fuck, I look like a really good director when they're acting. And at that show, I said, like, from now on, I'm going to only go for the best. I'm going to try to only go for the best actors. I'm going to try to write my script so some actors can. And then right after that, I went to, like, working with, like, 4 kids who had no, like, experience before whatsoever. So it was really, really challenging. I was like, you know, like, when you're fishing the... I was fishing the performances, trying to bring the right... Anyway, it was fun, but it was really tough. And one of them was really good, actually. He worked with a famous Persian director, too, like the guy, Captain.
Mm-hmm.
Captain, like, he had, like, 2 feature film experiences, but the rest, it was their first. So it was, like, really, like, it was like Kindergarten Cop.
God damn. that's really impressive, because I'll tell you, with their performances that, you know, they ended up giving on screen, I wouldn't have never knew that was their first feature length. For a lot of them, I loved Yusuf. Yusuf was awesome. That character is great, especially his obsession with the zombies. That's fucking awesome.
They were adorable, seriously.
So each child in the story is mutated from a toxic explosion, causing, you know, each one's missing a mouth, one's missing eyes, one's missing a nose, one's missing ears. What inspired that idea? Because it's very unique.
Well, actually, the idea stemmed from this short story, this short script my co-writer in Baskin wrote. and it was just titled Perihan, girl's name, and it was basically like, it was like a 80s cozy family drama in a building in the middle of the city with the full family, and the girl has no mouth, but it was kind of like a Pinocchio story. Like, she gets an operation, it's open, but every time she lies, it stays open. If she doesn't lie, if she's honest for a while, it closes. So I love the idea, I love the concept, but I didn't know what to do with it. And at the time, like, there was this government funding that we could apply for. So we applied for that. And then we won the second biggest prize. And then I said to my friend, man, like, I really cannot connect with this. I can't try to write, like, would you give all the rights to me? And I tried to have a shot with it. And then he was super cool. He did. We signed something, but we both knew probably it wouldn't make any money. But like, if it made money, like, he wanted to take something anyway. So he was like super gentleman and cool about it. And then I just like, at the time, I was reading this amazing comic book series. Do you know Sweet Tooth?
Yeah, I've heard of that. Yeah.
This boy with antlers. It's like the tagline says Pinocchio meets Mad Max or something like that. Mm-hmm. And it's in a post-apocalyptic environment. And there's this kid with antlers. And then they kill his father, and military is after him. And then he runs into this other like animal hybrid boys. So like I said, you know what? I love this idea. I'm just gonna like mesh this with this girl with no mouth idea. So that was one of the inspirations I had. And like, since I was very young, I wanted to do something like Stand By Me or Hook or mm-hmm. Goonies or Clubhouse Detectives. So this was my shot at doing something like that. After two like surreal horror movies, like gore movies, I wanted to do something like Terry Gilliam's Tideland or something like that.
Yeah, and the thing I like about The Girl With No Mouth is it's like, like you said, it is like the post-apocalyptic Goonies, and it's way way more grim than I was expecting it to be. You know, it does get pretty dark in a lot of areas, and me being a horror fan, I was, you know, I wasn't sure how I was going to like it, but then, you know, once I realized, oh, this isn't just, you know, your normal kids movie, it has a way more depth than that. I thought it was brilliant. The film is set in a post-apocalyptic world, and you had some really cool looking sets. I was wondering, were those like actually built sets, or was that like an actual abandoned town?
Yeah, that was an actual abandoned town, because like otherwise we would have no budget for that sort of a thing. And still, like, considering like the movies that you can put this movie next to your DVD shelf, like, this is such a super micro low budget movie. And we just had this like location scout guy. We gave him some pocket money, and then he went on a tour in Anatolia in Minor Asia. So he went all to these little towns, and like, he was sending me these photos, but they were all like abandoned old towns. It wasn't like, it didn't have the magic of like that city, you know, beyond Thunderdome or like, you know, many other cities, you know. So I was like, fuck, it's not going to be that cool. It's not, what can I do? Maybe I should make it like a period piece or something. And then like he comes up with this place, which is an abandoned, how do you say, what's the word in English? Like, you know, there was a factory, and there was this like things around it where the factory workers lived. So it had a theater, it had a hospital, it had a library. So immediately it had a school. So it had a feeling of like a little city rather than a little Turkish town. So that kind of suddenly like brought us some production value out of the blue. It was super cheap. It was an abandoned, maybe it was like a miner's thing, like in The Hills Have Eyes, you know?
Yeah.
Something like that. Yeah. More modern and like more big version of it.
Yeah. It was really cool. And I also really liked the beach, you know, for the final shot of the film. Fucking really beautiful, beautiful scenery.
Yeah, that's really close to my like home too. It's on the Black Sea region of Istanbul, on the European side. You know, Istanbul is the only bicontinental city in the world.
Oh, really?
Yeah, half of it is on Asia, half of it is on Europe. Just like Brooklyn Bridge, there's a big bridge in between. Like, there are three of them actually, and it's like a 20-minute ferry ride from one continent to another. Like, you go to work, it's crazy.
That's crazy. Go ahead, Dan.
Have you had any challenges promoting this and getting it into festivals with the virus?
Yes. with a virus. No, this was way before. This
Yeah,
the world premiere for this was 2019. Oh, okay. Early, yeah, or maybe late 2019. So at the time, there was no COVID trouble, but the main festivals, like, I have a really good relationship with, and like Baskin and Housewife thrived, if you will, kind of like didn't like this one so much. Like, they weren't really turned on by it, or like they said, like, we don't know where to, which category to put this under, because they're like mostly hardcore horror film festivals. Then again, maybe like it didn't connect with many people as thought it would. But then again, there's this like festival called Tallinn Black Nights in Estonia. It's one of the 15 A-list festivals in the world. Mm-hmm. They liked it a lot. They kind of embraced it. So it found a home very late on the festival circuit. So since it found a home very late in the festival circuit, it wasn't like a big sell or anything. And in Turkey, unfortunately, like, this mainstream entertainment is like so junk. It's so super junk. So yeah, it's kind of like underground thing, just like Baskin and Housewife. They're also very underground here, but like finally it's available on one digital platform for the past year, so it's cool.
It has a great edge to it that a lot of children's films don't anymore. I mean, they are so very just safe, and this has an edge that I think children will appreciate. I think it's a very timely movie.
Yeah.
Thank you. Yeah.
Yeah. The one thing I wanted to talk about too is there's a strong social commentary, obviously, in the story, you know, involving governments and censorship and journalism. I was wondering, what was your biggest inspiration behind that?
Basically, that the company is kind of like something like Wayland and Yutani or Fallout, you know, that brand in Fallout computer games. Especially, I was a big fan of Fallout 1 and 2 in the PC gaming days of 90s. And then Umbrella Company or any of those like mega corp companies that own, like, it's kind of like you don't even hear the name of the country in this film, in Girl With No Mouth. Is it still Turkey? Is this company both Turkey, or is it like a conglomerate company in the world, which is like above nations? I like that idea of like having this dystopian over-capitalistic company. So it kind of stemmed from there to make a villain of that company. And this one little henchman who is a like a doomed character, but is trying to go after other people.
Yeah, he was awesome too. I loved that, the main antagonist. I can't
he's awesome. He was just here with me just 10 minutes ago. He left.
Oh, really?
Yeah, actually, my friend also, like, I'm here with the lead actor of Baskin. We're gonna watch UFC together tonight.
Oh, nice!
I'm gonna watch that after this interview. So
yeah, that's me awesome. Too, man. I'm super happy because tonight is one of the rare nights. It's like on a proper nighttime that we can actually watch live. You know, so yeah my like the bad guy, the villain from Girl with No Mouth, was also here, but like he left 10 minutes ago. He's not a UFC guy.
Speaking about Baskin, you know, it's very well received, I think, in the States. We all think it's one of the best. I speak for everybody here. We all think it's one of the best foreign films in the past, like, decade. Truthfully. I'm just wondering, like, are you planning on coming back to the horror genre after this? Or do you want to kind of extend your arms out to other genres?
Did you watch Housewife?
Yes, I loved it.
Yes. It was kind of like my one shot after Baskin, that they gave me money to do something like that. I went and tried to do something like a supernatural giallo in the vein of Phenomena, or like all the Mario Bava and Michel Soavi movies, like Fulci movies. I wanted to do something like that, I kind of drifted away from Baskin, but it was the same spirit inside. And then after that, I was, given this grant from this government to do this film that we're just talking about. And recently, we're doing a mini series. This guy is like paying for. So every time I'm trying to finance my project, it's really difficult to find a crazy investor for it. Like every time I say, okay, this is the last time I found an investor for my project, this was left. And then something comes up. So it depends on just finding the right investor who has a knack for horror. I'm like super down to like make Baskin 2 or like complete this nightmare trilogy, if you will. Thank you.
Yeah,
the lead actor of Baskin here, by the way.
That's awesome. Fucking so cool.
So yeah, they're gonna watch UFC as well tonight.
Oh, cool, nice.
I wanted to ask, now that I have you here, is Housewife and Baskin, are they connected in any way, or is it more, because I mean, they both have that strong Lovecrafty and, you know, feel to them. So I was wondering, are they connected?
They are connected in the way, you know, Fulci's Nightmare Trilogy are connected in a way.
Okay.
And I'm a huge Fulci fan. Like, check this out.
Awesome.
Fuck yeah.
That's hell yeah, awesome. Nice.
By the way, you guys have amazing backgrounds, man. Like at home, I also have a background like this, but tonight at my friend's place, it's amazing, man. It's so cool.
Yeah. Thank you, guys.
I usually have a better one, but I fucked up with me and I can't sit on the floor. So, you said that you're working on a miniseries. Is that going to be available to us in the States?
Yeah, hopefully. It's just like it's sold to South America now. And we'll see if it goes to North America. There's this distributor who wants to buy it. I'm not the owner, and our producer is like a really weird guy, cool but weird guy. So he's kind of like tentative to sell to North America before he gets an MG, which is like a minimum grant. But yeah, it's like a really interesting story because the first series of that, I was kind of inspired by shows like Fleabag or Friends from College. I love that one. I love Friends from College. And some similar show, and Eighth Grade, this A24 film, Eighth Grade.
Yeah.
And then it was a call girl who I actually know in real life. Like she's a friend of mine. And I wanted to do her story, but it's not an intense story. It's meant to be fun. It's like erotic fun. And at the time, Turkey is like Turkish secularism and censorship is going so down the hill. Like since I was born in the past 3 decades, and it's what I did with that show is like people like they think it's super extreme and stuff, which is unfortunate. But it has a erotic value. I enjoyed it. And then like they gave me money in a way to do the second season, and then I said like, can I write whatever I want? And they said yes. And then I went like a little body horror and supernatural with it, and I can't believe they let me do it. I'm not sure how it's going to be censored or not, how much is what's going to be censored, how much is going to be director's cut reaching the audiences in Turkey, but I'm super, super happy with it. It's the first season and second season are completely different, bonkers, but like I like it a lot. So I'm having super fun with that. But yeah, as I said, I would love to go back doing something like Baskin. And you know what? I wrote an opening for Hellraiser, Hellraiser reboot, and I presented to Dimension guys right before Baskin's premiere in Toronto Film Festival. It was crazy. Like they told me like, there's like two guys from Dimension. Actually, I was to meet Harvey Weinstein. And at the time, I didn't even know who he was. I had no idea. This is like 2015. And then they said last minute, like Harvey Weinstein, head of company, couldn't come. So there was these two like company guys, like two guys like from Wolf of Wall Street type of guys. And I just pitched them my opening idea. It was crazy. It started with ISIS and they're like, violating like all the statues and stuff, and then anyway, like this box comes up like from body horror way. Like it was an amazing opening. I'd love to do something like that at some point.
It needs to happen.
Yeah.
What do we got to do to make this happen? Even as a fan film, I will give you my money.
You know, like actually later I had I even storyboarded it. I can send it to you. I can send you the storyboarded first 5 pages, the opening.
Yes, please.
And then I thought, like, how about instead of the box, because there was like they go under this like archaeological place after they kill ISIS guys, and then there's this lament, this tomb. It opens, and then there's this like torso with a head, just the torso connected with like connected like to the place, and then he breaks his skull, and he opens the skull, and right before he breaks the skull, he says, "Hello, Dad," or something. And from inside his skull, he takes out the box. And then, so I say, like, how about, like, if I'm not able to do this, how about I do it instead of the box? He takes out the key that comes from the boss Ramsay's neck for Baskin. Yeah. And then through that key, this becomes like Baskin too. So that's this crazy idea I have, hopefully.
Oh, it's funny. It's funny that you mention Hellraiser, because I'm a big Hellraiser guy, and I remember seeing Baskin, and I think it's one of the best of the last 30 years. I mean,
oh my god, no way!
And everybody I know loves it. I know people in Canada, Europe, all over the world. Everybody loved Baskin so much. I think it's a new classic, and I would love to see you tackle Hellraiser.
Absolutely. Include me in that. When I first saw it, I could not stop talking about it. I did my best to spread the word, but it was getting out before I even had a chance. Fucking awesome.
Man, awesome. Thank you.
I still listen to the song playing in the car scene when they're all singing in my car all the fucking time.
That's the tune. Yeah, I love that one.
Out of curiosity, Mehmet is like a kind of become like a cult icon of the main father from Baskin.
Yes.
How did you come across that guy? I'm just curious about that story.
It's like a really interesting story. That guy's life story is so crazy. He's a car park attendant in a town in Istanbul, and basically, I was doing Baskin the short movie in 2013. And right before that, I watched Evil Dead Remake. And in the beginning of Evil Dead Remake, there was this guy with his face burned. So like before I'm doing a movie, whatever I watch, I'm like, my mind snatches something like, you know, like, and I said to my cast director, I said, how about like, we have this guy with like face disfiguration or like maybe amputee or something. Can't you find me something like that? Don't we have casting agencies like that in Turkey who do this kind of stuff? So I would have him like on the corner, and it would be like something to add to the House of Horrors in Baskin the Short. And he said, let me see what I can do. He came back to me with an A4 paper, like two amputee guys. And then this guy, this face, I'm like, who is this? What is this? Like, is this creepy or is this weird? It's not really creepy, but it's very interesting. It's very, maybe it can be made very creepy. And I couldn't afford to meet him beforehand or anything. He just showed up to the set. And do you remember him in the short film? Did you watch the short film?
Yes. Yeah, when he's on the bed.
Yeah, he's just on the bed. So like, and when I entered the set, immediately there was an aura to him. Like people were like two steps behind, and people were like, they had taken back, and they were all staring. Everyone was staring at this guy, which was uncomfortable, you know. And then I just walked straight up to him. I shook his hand, like kiss him on the both cheeks, Turkish way. I said, "Mehmet, brother Mehmet, welcome to the set." And then we just hit it off. And slowly, I realized this guy—he's an outsider artist. He's not just like a one in a million skin condition guy. He was like really, because like we started talking with him, and then he told me, Mr. John, he tells me, like, Mr. John, when I was a kid, I watched Beauty and the Beast. And I said, this is my movie. I'm like, oh my God, this guy has heart. And then after that part, we became friends with him. And when I was writing the part for the father, the villain, I said, you know what? I would love him to play this, but probably he's coming from a conservative background, like from another town in Anatolia. I thought like, probably there's no way he's gonna accept this, but I'm just going to send it to him anyway. I send the script to him, and then he goes back to his home country for the summer holiday, whatever. And then like he strikes back to me with like pictures of the scenes, just like a storyboard, but written. It's like it was like painted by a very talented 10-year-old, if you will. Mm-hmm. It was like very crude, but very much attention to the detail. Later, we did a, I think you can find it online. We did like a, in a bohemian part of Istanbul, we did an exhibition of this guy. And then we hit it off. And then I had a friend who gave him some acting lessons. And then he gave the speech again and again and again. And then, yeah, we did it.
That is fantastic.
But he's a car park attendant. And his story is also, this is my story of meeting him. And then his story, which is very long, but to cut it short, he just goes to the... He goes to the mayor or municipality leader of his, like, where he lives. And then he says, sir, look, I have both working hands, working feet. Like, I'm a strong guy. They don't give me work because of my appearance. And then Mayor, being like the crazy wise ass guy he is, he says, of course they don't give you a job. You look like a spaceman. He's like kind of like he's joking. Jesus. And then he says, let me take you to press. And then like there's all these like newspaper clippings in this guy's house. Spaceman Mehmet, Spaceman Mehmet, like everywhere. he was even on like national TV news at the time. I didn't see, but he was like the spaceman. And you would think that he would be offended by it, but actually not, because like he thought like he was a character for the first time in his life. And actually they found him an arranged marriage. They found him a wife. And then they got him a job at the car park attendant. And before he was an outcast, and then he became a member of the society. And he's like a really fighter, survivor guy. And being the smart guy he is, I don't know how he knows this, but he goes to a little like a acting agency, and then he enlists. And then 5 years later, I found him.
he has a role in an American film, I believe, Killer Popcorn. I saw something online. I don't know.
That's the crazy story. There's this guy. I thought like he was a cool underground horror guy, and then like, he turns out he's writing me so much, but they don't do nothing. He wants to make this movie, but I don't think he'll ever do it. I hope he does. I would be so happy if he does. But like, he got me translate so many things to Mehmet. And then at some point I said, guys, do you have financing for this? Like, where do you start? And then I realized they're not going to be able to, like, they're really passionate guys, but probably it's not happening.
It seems like there's a great opportunity for a documentary on Mehmet. He seems like he's had an amazing life.
I mean, that would be so cool. Like, I thought about it a lot too, but yeah.
Yeah.
He's a bit secretive if you go to his house, but probably like, he's also like, when he gets friendly with you, he kind of opens up. But I wanted to use his house and himself, like in the season 2 of Naked. He was a bit hesitant, but if you pay the right price, he's okay.
I'm back to what you were talking about, censorship in Turkey. I'm surprised did you face any flack with, you know, the extreme content in your movies? Because obviously, you know, Baskin and Housewife are pretty brutal films.
I mean, they were never mainstream. So actually, like, I was in Stockholm Film Festival, and from Swedish audience, somebody asked me, like, if there's no, like, democracy and there's so much censorship in Turkey, how come you're allowed to make a film like this? And I think it was a good question. I was, like, taken aback. And then I said, you know, like, it's not like there's no democracy in Turkey, but there is just no standard to the democracy or the justice, you know? So it's like jungle rules. If you're at the right place at the right time, you can get away with murder. You can get away with more than democracy. But like, if not, then like it's like also you're having a very risky life. So that's Turkish life for you. And you know, things I see with Trump and the stuff happening in US for the past 4 years, you know, that's been my whole life. Like, that's the whole political history of Turkey and Middle East, basically. So I'm kind of used to it. But yeah.
One other thing I wanted to just ask is, what are some movies that you've seen like from 2020 that you really enjoyed?
His House was cool. It had creepy moments. It was a bit formulaic, like Babadook for me. Like, I'm not a huge fan. I kind of like Hereditary and It Follows and Doctor Sleep. Hagazusa.
Hagazusa is awesome. Yeah,
Hagazusa is amazing, right? And I was also like happily surprised by Doctor Sleep. Like, I liked it a lot. At some times, it was.
I was just gonna say, Mike Flanagan, fucking anything he's been putting out the past couple of years has been badass.
Yeah. I mean, at times it felt like a cheesy Netflix movie, but still, at the end of the day, the story it tells was like pretty cool. It was like X-Men meets Shining with heart. It was really cool. And then what else? These are the horror movies that I really liked. The Invisible Man. I was also happily surprised.
Same.
Yeah. It was pretty cool, right? And I thought 1917 was also a horror movie. Did you watch that?
Yeah, yes. One continuous shot. I love 1917.
Yeah, I watched Uncut Gems and 1917 back to back on the first days of quarantine with my wife, and we were like, "Okay, that's that was crazy."
Yeah, 2020 has been a really good year, and I was happy to see Girl with No Mouth. We got the Blu-ray out here, so I was pleased.
I need that too. Like, I'm gonna tell the guys to send you one soon.
Yeah, it's on all, for anybody watching this interview, it's on all social or all the streaming platforms, Google Play, Amazon, YouTube. You can rent it on all of them. So, yeah, I'm so glad that we finally got our hands on it. It, because, you know, I've been messaging you about it for a while, saying, you know, when the hell is it ever coming out to the States? So I'm glad we got it this past month.
Yeah, right, this is so cool for me, guys. Like, seriously, like, I'm so, like, honored you guys invited me to your show. And look, we're talking, like, the same vocabulary, and it's, like, something really difficult for me to, like, hear. Istanbul and Turkey has, like, great cinema potential. It has amazing films. But, like, it's always a certain type of films, and genre is not celebrated here as much as I'd love it to be, you know? And so this kind of stuff is, like, interview is very precious for me.
Well, thank you for coming on, man. It's an honor to have you. Like I said, we all love your work. You're one of my favorite working directors today. And just next time you have a next movie, let's have you on again and talk about it.
Sure. I hope, like, this season 2 becomes available, and I'll send you the link, or let's keep in touch.
Absolutely. Yes, please.
Hell yeah, dude. Thank you. I'm looking forward to all your future work, horror or not. Like, you've earned a fan in all of us, you know, your entire career.
Thank you so much, guys. Take care.
Thank you.
You as well.
Enjoy UFC.
Yes.
Yeah, I will do.
Oh, man, what a great interview. We want to thank John. Man, that Hellraiser thing. I'm like, I've got this in my head now, and I want that to happen.
Dude, he will knock it out of the damn park. If anybody's watching that can help us make this happen, you know. Let's get it.
Anybody. You have money. Sell your house if you don't. It'll be worth it. I don't care. I'll sell my house right now. I'll just live in the tent or something, because this needs to happen.
Too bad he didn't get to pitch the idea directly to the sheriff.
Yeah. That would have been awesome.
You come to America.
Yeah, that was. I was just saying that was a great interview. Fucking he that is really easy to talk to, and you can tell how much of a fan he is of just, you know, all the shit we love. So it was awesome having you on, John. We appreciate it, and hope to have you back soon.
Yeah, absolutely. Love to have you back.
One of us. So with that, you can like, share, and subscribe to all of our bullshits across the social media. Make sure you follow John. And also, we're on Patreon. It starts just at $1. You get exclusive and early content. And most importantly, uncensored. So please check that shit out. Gentlemen, let's get the hell out of here.
All right. Good night.
Good night, everyone. Stay sick,
motherfuckers. Thank you very much again, John. Adios.